an unprecedented military airlift is underway. On June 16th, at least 32 tanker aircraft departed from American bases toward Europe, landing at key stopover bases for Middle East operations. The mission remains undisclosed, but it's not for some military exercise. A fleet of 32 tankers can support well over 200 combat aircraft operating at the same time. Meanwhile, on the other end of the globe, the USS Nimitz Carrier Strike Group has cancelled its scheduled port call in Vietnam and left the South China Sea. It is headed toward the Middle East to join the aircraft carriers that are already there. This kind of buildup usually signals preparations for a large-scale air campaign. If America plans to support Israel's campaign offensively, these tanker planes and aircraft carriers would be among the most critical assets. In the coming days, the United States may find cause to get directly involved, if it hasn't already. The drumbeats are distant, but they're marching this way. For days, Netanyahu has urged Trump to join the war against Iran. He may have finally given in to the pressure. Recently, he demanded Iran's unconditional surrender and claimed the US knows the Supreme Leader's exact location but will not target him for now. This story was picked up by nearly 250 sources, so it made quite the headlines. Less noticed, however, is the story of who might replace the Supreme Leader. Days earlier, Reza Pahlavi, Iran's exiled crown prince, called on the country's security forces to cut ties with the regime and support a mass uprising. This is a major development. Iran has no coherent opposition to speak of, which is why all previous uprisings failed. But with the crown prince stepping in as a dark horse candidate, a unified opposition could emerge. This story has barely been picked up though. Only 80 sources reported on it, and most sources lean toward the right. So there's still much to piece together about what comes next. I use ground news to connect the dots because it allows me to check out local and regional sources. I truly believe that is the best way to understand this tricky region. I can't stress enough how important this is, which is why I asked Ground News to sponsor this video. I mostly browse the Blindspot page, where they share interesting stories that other news outlets often miss due to biased reporting. Go to ground.news/Caspian or download the mobile app and enter promo code Caspian to save 40% off the Vantage plan. Also, by subscribing, you're directly supporting my channel. Thank you, Ground News. The link is below. Israel's airstrikes have hit hard, but not deep enough. Satellite imagery shows damage at Natanz, which is Iran's main uranium facility. Key buildings have been leveled and more than a dozen top scientists have been killed. This building, for instance, turns weapons-grade uranium into uranium metal, which forms the core of a nuclear weapon. Rebuilding it could take up to a year. However, the real problem remains. Iran's most protected site, the Fordo fuel enrichment plant, is buried deep inside a mountain near Qom. Encased in reinforced concrete, the facility is believed to be beyond the reach of any Israeli weapon known to exist. It was built in secret and only publicly unveiled in 2009. Since then, Fordo has been at the center of international attempts to curb Iran's nuclear program. But Iran has other ultra-secure facilities to rely on besides Fordo. Tehran has recently been building an even deeper, more fortified site known as Pickaxe Mountain Plant. It is built straight into a mountain just a few kilometers south of Natanz. While Fordo is believed to have two tunnel entrances, Pickaxe has at least four, making it much harder to seal off by bombing. Its underground chambers are also believed to offer more floor space. Iran has barred the IAEA from inspecting the site, so most of what is known about Pickaxe comes from open source leaks and a fair amount of speculation. However, if Iran decided to assemble a nuclear weapon while under attack, this is the place they would do it. Conventional bombs simply can't reach it. Israel's best bunker busters, like the US-supplied GBU-28, can penetrate up to 6 meters of concrete, but that is nowhere near enough for the hardened chambers of Pickaxe or even Fordo. The only weapon that stands a chance of getting through is the GBU-57 Massive Ordnance Penetrator. This 13,000 kilogram bomb can smash through 61 meters of concrete. It is the most sophisticated bunker buster we know of. But only the US Air Force can deploy it, using the B-2 bomber. No other aircraft is configured to carry it, and Israel has no B-2 bombers. So, to destroy Iran's nuclear program, Natanz, Fordo, and Pickaxe will have to be taken down, and only America can pull the trigger. Admittedly, air power alone may not be enough. Special forces would have to be deployed on the ground to confirm the destruction of each site, but the bottom line is that American involvement, especially in aerial operations, is inevitable. Most of the US tanker aircraft landed in Italy, Spain, and Germany at bases that typically serve as launch pads for operations in the Middle East. Moro Air Base in Spain is one such example. It is a place where tanker aircraft specialize in taking off to refuel B-2 bombers in the air. Doing so would then allow the bombers to keep flying to the Middle East to carry out attacks. So, what we're seeing is the formation of an air corridor designed to sustain a prolonged assault. A fleet of 32 tankers can keep over 200 combat aircraft in the air at the same time. There is no need for that kind of support in a region where the US already has a massive footprint. So, either America is preparing to strike Iran directly, or it is setting up a refueling mission over Iraq or Syria to let Israeli jets carry more bombs instead of external fuel tanks. The latter is the safer bet for the United States. With that many US tanker aircraft refueling Israeli jets, Israel can begin the second phase of the war, the Dahiya Doctrine. And from here, things get dark really fast. The Dahiya Doctrine is a controversial military strategy that involves the use of overwhelming firepower, including attacks on civilian infrastructure, to deter enemies. It is named after a suburb of Beirut that was heavily bombed during the 2006 Lebanon War. The doctrine is designed to inflict massive destruction, pressure civilians to turn against local officials, and shift blame onto non-state actors who operate within civilian areas. Former Israeli General Gadi Eisenkot described it bluntly: if a rocket is fired from a village, the entire village becomes a target. Israel is expected to apply that in Tehran, which would explain the additional tanker aircraft en route to the region. They're going to ramp up the aerial assault. The casualties would be enormous. Already, a mass exodus of civilians is underway, with many fleeing Tehran for safer ground. Critics argue the doctrine violates key principles of international law, namely the distinction between civilians and combatants, the requirement for proportionality, and the prohibition on collective punishment under the Geneva Convention. That is all very true, but sometimes power makes its own rules, and the world has no choice but to move on. This is the war American, Israeli, and Iranian policymakers have prepared for the last 40 years. It has all come down to this. Iran knows the United States is likely to join Israel in attacking its nuclear program. In anticipation, Iran has held back most of its hypersonic missiles, storing them deep underground in bunkers where Israeli bombs can't reach. These missiles, designed to evade standard defenses, including the Iron Dome, are not meant for symbolic retaliation. They are reserved for targeted, high-impact strikes on key US military assets across the periphery, if America gets involved directly. Iran's strategy could include military bases such as the British Air Force Base, Akrotiri, and the Andreas Papandreou Air Base, both in Cyprus. These two are used for surveillance and regional operations and would make for top priority targets, Other targets could include the Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar, which serves as America's main regional command center. Also at risk are the Qadisiya Air Base and the Harir Air Base in Iraq, the Ali Al Salem Air Base and Camp Arifjan in Kuwait, the Al Dafra Air Base in the UAE, the Muwafaq Salti Air Base in Jordan, and the Prince Sultan Air Base in Saudi Arabia. Also, within range are the US carrier strike groups in the Red Sea and Eastern Mediterranean, but also the Naval Support Activity Base in Bahrain, which is home to the US 5th Fleet. If Iran fires its hypersonic missiles at these sites, the casualties would be massive, especially if equipped with dirty bombs to scatter radioactive materials. Despite Iran's efforts to hide its arsenal and nuclear sites deep underground, the US military has weapons that can still reach them. Tehran understands that if the conflict turns into a full-scale war, even its most secure sites might not stay safe for long, which is why it is carefully weighing when, where, and if to use its most powerful weapons. This will not end well. Many will die. But the last time someone struck US bases, they got a glimpse of the portable sun. I've been your host Shirvan from Caspian Report. If you approve of what we do, please leave a comment, hit the like button, and mayhaps share the video. In any case, thank you for your time, and salam.